Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Zurian Show. As always, we hope that we find you in the best of health, wealth, happiness, and, of course, good spirits. Today's show, I think, is going to be a phenomenal show because we've got a phenomenal gentleman on to share some of his knowledge, his wisdom, and, of course, his time with us. Today, we're going to talk with Mr. James Mape. James Mape is the founder of Quantum Leap Thinking, creator of Transformational Coach. He's an expert in psychology of applying imagination. He's a best-selling author. He's a highly acclaimed business speaker, consultant, seminar leader, and experience and excellence coach. I know I added experience in there, but that's because he's got so much experience to share. For over 30 years, James has been a student of human behavior and dedicated to helping individuals, teams, organizations to identify and to get through the breakthroughs of the breakthrough the barriers to help them reach their goals and to also achieve excellence. James is definitely a person that you want to listen to when it talks about trying to improve yourself and also trying to understand your mind. Today's show is Imagine That, Using Your Brain for Achieving Extreme Success. So with no further ado, we're going to put the great man on himself. James, how are you today?
Well, I'm terrific, but I'm a bit exhausted listening to that introduction. I couldn't be better.
Outstanding. And what would you like to share with the listeners today? Could you tell us a little bit about you? I know I gave an introduction, but I know it comes nowhere near all of the things that you've done.
I'm going to probably spend 2 or 3 minutes just telling you about my life because I've been very blessed. I have 5 careers. Literally. And in my life, I've been able to surround myself with a team of people to help me be creative and create. So when I was very young, I come from the Midwest and a relatively poor family and was blessed that I had a lot of support and a lot of drive. And I went to college. I got booted out of my first year of college, but then I buckled down, ended up getting my master's in theater, undergraduate in psychology, went off, acted for a couple of years, but then I became interested in the mind. I became specifically interested in hypnosis and how it could help people change their belief system. So before long, I was in New York. I was doing soap operas, but at the same time, I had a clinic called the New York Hypnosis Center, and I started helping people build self-confidence, break through fears. And as I was working in all this, I started to study neurology and creativity on my own. And then I launched into the mid-70s and doing seminars called Positive Self-Image Training, which really was just about that. It was about helping people identify and be able to play to their strengths instead of trying to spent all their time fixing up their weaknesses. And then later, a fellow by the name of Marcus Buckingham came out with a bestseller about that. And then I did another seminar that I took public called Choices, because a lot of people that are in life, when you look at yourself as a victim, that means you end up blaming your circumstances or your parents or society or God or whatever you blame for your circumstances that you don't want, like what you're doing, you give away your power and you don't have choice anymore because you've given away your choice to other people. So that seminar focused on that. That ended about 1979. And then I got into an additional area. In addition to doing films, and my first film was Taxi Driver, and I kept doing films, I got into an area of the mind called regression therapy, which was basically taking people back in their past to discover some issue that they needed to let go of. And I ended up working with the New York Police Department for memory recovery for witnesses and victims to crime. And I also branched off near that time, around 1980, into working with child abuse victims on forgiveness issues. And
wow.
So all these things kept accumulating. And in 1982, my manager, who I had at that time, and he's now my best friend, said, you should talk to businesses. And I said, no, I find business boring. He said, well, you won't when you start getting into it. So I went, all right, let me give it a try. I've done it with everything else in my life. And in 1982, I created what was called the Quantum Leap Thinking Organization. And it took me a number of years to write my first book. I have dyslexia. I had to overcome that. Well, you don't overcome it. You learn to deal with it. And in spite of it, you forge ahead. And so I ended up speaking to businesses, but at the same time, all these other things were still going on. In addition, I decided that I wanted to put a one-man show on stage using hypnosis. So I ended up doing that probably 1,000 times, and my dream was to be on Broadway. And 7 years ago, I performed my show on Broadway, and then 2 years later, I performed it at Alice Tully Hall at Lincoln Center. So that was a fulfillment of a great dream. So I was able to kind of put that to bed and refocus my energies on branding myself as an evangelist of the imagination. And the reason I chose that is because most people, when they hear the word imagination and they hear the word creativity, they don't understand the difference. And the difference is very important for people who are into achievement, who are into helping other people. The imagination, Einstein said, imagination is more important than knowledge. It is a preview of life's coming attractions. And indeed it is. So we imagine all the time. And I call it the wild child, because we can imagine horrible things. We can imagine being rejected. We can imagine failing, or we can imagine succeeding. We can imagine forgiving. So the imagination is just out there. But the moment that you harness it, the moment you focus your imagination and you apply it to a specific outcome, and we'll call that a goal, it's called applied imagination, then it turns into creativity. Because once you apply your imagination to doing something, whether it's playing a music instrument or whether it's you doing your wonderful talk show or whether it's writing a book or whether it's acting or whether it's being a minister, or it becomes something that then you can contribute out in the world. So applied imagination is extremely important for me. And that brings me to the present. And I'll tell you a quick story about this, because all this other stuff has been leading up to one thing. 3.5 years ago, I was in Scotland acting in a movie, and it was doing my dream role. It was a thriller. And I was cast in this film because 21 years previous, the director of this film, who directed a cult film called The Wicker Man, he saw my one-man show in Connecticut, and he never forgot. And 21 years later, he called me up and he said, I'd like to give you a featured role in my film we're shooting in Scotland. Can you imagine? I mean, it was like a dream. So my wife and I go over to Scotland. He puts us up in a castle, literally in a castle. And for 10 days, it was one of the most exciting things in my life. So I got back to Connecticut and I got depressed. And I thought to myself, well, maybe it's jet lag, or maybe it's, you know, I was so excited. But then that depression continued for 3 days. And I said to my wife, you know, I know enough about the mind and the body. There's something wrong. So I go to my doctor. And that was at 10 in the morning. And my doctor listened to my heart. And he said, you know, I want to send you across the street to a cardiologist. And I'm going to have him do an echocardiogram. So I did that. And he listened to my heart. He did all the things you do. And that evening, I was going out with one of my best friends for martinis and lobster. He was taking me out to dinner. And I remember it was 6:02 at night. The phone rang. It was my cardiologist. And he said to me, and this is literally what he said, James Mapes, I know you very well. You're stubborn, so you have to hear what I'm going to say. You have less than 2 weeks to live. you have, can you imagine, an aortic aneurysm, and you don't have that long. So I went in and had two martinis. And it happened to be one of my best friends, and I was flipping out. So I had to tell my wife, and it was so scary to me that I made a decision. I had, and I'll back up for a second, I had been doing something for many, many years that I never charged anybody money for. It was just something that I did. I had studied a lot about the human mind, so I would work with people, helping them prepare for surgery. I would help them relax. I would help them take away their fear. I would help them be confident and hopeful. And I had worked with cancer patients. I had worked with people with brain operations, back surgery, knee surgery. So I was really experienced about this area. And I said to myself, the only way I'm going to keep my sanity is if I go into this experience and embrace it and learn from it and come out and create a program that can help people go through what I'm going through. So 3.5 years later, literally last week, I created over this past 3.5 years a 2-disc CD program called Patient Pre-Op Post-Op Healing Therapy. And it literally, the program, we're putting it up at Yale New Haven and Hospital, Bridgeport Hospital in Connecticut. And this is all new. Whereas it is, in fact, before I was called you and you called me and we did the show, we're doing the show, is I was on the phone about this, so what we're doing about marketing. So this is a huge deal for me because it's something that could be of such service to people. And what it does, it takes away all fear. It's all mental processing and kind of like deep relaxation. It helps you go into surgery relaxed. This is going to sound weird, but it also moves the blood flow away from point of incision and brings it back after your operation. It gets people off narcotics probably 30% faster. And it helps people heal about 25% faster. Now, it's not magical. There's nothing in magical thinking about this. I just did an interview yesterday. I said, you don't even have to believe in this. All you have to do is listen to it because it's the way the mind works. It's for your listeners. I'll make it as simple as possible. Our mind is divided into two parts. One is the conscious mind, and I'm sure many people have heard about that. One is the subconscious. The conscious mind is the part of our brain that can visualize. It's the part that thinks. It's the part that analyzes. It's the critical part. And it's the part that's called self-talk. It's like the little voice in our head. And if you don't know what little voice that is, it's the one that's going, what little voice is that James Mapes talking about? That's the voice. Right? And anyone who is an athlete or who is a musician, they've learned to control your self-talk because that can be negative. We carry a lot of old garbage from our childhood, people that told us we couldn't do things or we weren't worthwhile. So that is the conscious part of our brain. The subconscious is it doesn't think. There's no thought process that goes on. It's the storehouse of our memories. It's what's called the seat of our emotion. In other words, it's the emotional part of ourselves. It also contains our DNA and our genetic self. I look at the mind as a very small rider on a very large elephant. And the rider is the conscious mind. And the subconscious is the elephant. Because what brain science has shown us, and this always shocks people, is that the subconscious controls 90% of our choices. In other words, when I go in to speak to a corporation,
yes, sir,
I tell them this story, and I say, if anybody has control issues, they better get up and leave the room now, because the truth is, you don't have control of your mind. Now, that's the bad news. The good news is that you can influence the subconscious. And that word influence is a huge, huge word, because that means that if we have the right tools, if we learn how to manage our thinking, if we learn how to manage our self-talk, if we learn the power of visualization, if we learn what being grateful or gratitude actually does to the brain, if we learn what positive thinking does to the brain, then we can put that rider into service and learn skills to influence the elephant. Now, the elephant doesn't like change very much. I'll play a game with you.
In fact, okay.
This is kind of a fun visual for your listeners. Imagine that I have a lemon, and imagine that you're seeing me hold this lemon in my hand, and I say to you, I'm going to count to two, and in a moment, I'm going to take a bite out of this lemon, and what I want you to do is to pretend or imagine that you have your own lemon in your hand. In order to do that, you have to create that in your imagination. You can look at my lemon, but you still have to visualize it. So what is a lemon? Well, it's yellow, and it has a form and a shape. And if you touch it, it's kind of bumpy. And if you put it up to your nose, it has a tart smell. Now, imagine that I take that lemon, I cut it in half, and imagine that I take a half of that lemon, I squeeze a little juice, I bring it up to my mouth, and at the count of two, one, two, I just, and I take a big bite out of that lemon. Now, when I do that in front of an audience, my next question, when I get my breath, is raise your hand if you had some kind of reaction to that imagination, visualization. And it never fails. I don't care if the audience is 20 or the largest audience I've ever spoken to is 10,000. Over 95% of the people in that audience raise their hand. And my response is, this is a miracle, because what you've just done with your mind, you have created a biochemical, physiological change in your body with your mind out of nothing, out of pure imagination. So if you extrapolate from that, you go, wow, that means that when I get to get angry and I start to think failure thoughts, or I start to think rejection, nobody's going to do this, or I can never have that, or somebody just, whenever you think those kinds of fear-based thinking, and it's called fear-based thinking, your body chemistry changes. And when you are able to transform, and I like the word transform better than change, and the reason is, when you say you've got to change, then people think I'm not good enough the way that I am. Well, I think everybody's good enough the way they are. But transformation means that you start accepting as you are now and forgiving everything there is to forgive about you and other people, and you start to learn about all the things I'm talking about. And then you start to transform yourself. You start to build. You start to be the kind of person that people want to be around and want to play with. One of the things that I always ask people in seminars is how do you know who you are? Sounds like a bizarre question, right? People kind of, what do you mean? I just know. Yeah, but how do you know? You don't know by looking at your license, driver's license or your picture. How do you know? And what I eventually get people to look at is a much bigger picture. If you start to look at the people who are in your life, around you, your closest friends or lack of friends, you start to see who you are. The reality is that, listen, I've worked in drug rehab. Believe me, I was no saint in the 60s. I've grown emotionally over the years. But the people in my life, let me put this another way. 25 years ago, when I met my wife, she brought me into her office, and she said, before we go any further, I'd like to show you something on my wall. And she said, read this. And the sign said, I will not be with people that vex the spirit. So
wow.
We have, is that kind of cool? We have
stuck
to this. You know, you want to be, surround yourself with people who give you energy. You want to surround yourself with people that don't deplete you. And everybody listening knows whether that's a friend. That doesn't mean that, that people can't be in a bad mood. It just means there are life diminishers and there are life enhancers. And if you want to be successful, and I don't mean monetarily, I mean mentally, physically, spiritually, emotionally, and socially, you have to look around who you're hanging around with and start to seek out people who are smarter than you, more successful than you. One of my dearest friends is Anthony Hopkins, the actor. And the reason he's a friend is I sent him out of the blue my book in 1996, and he called me on the phone. And
phenomenal.
He's far more talented than me. He's smarter than I am. I've got friends who are down in, I'm speaking to you from St. Thomas in the Virgin Islands, where my wife and I come down here to write 10 weeks during the winter. One of the friends down here is the inventor of fiber optics that I met, and he's become a friend. The guy's brilliant, you know, and I just like listening to him. So the point is, no matter where you are in your life, you can always search out mentors. You can always start to make proactive choices in your life that build you and stretch you and challenge you.
Right.
And I'm turning this back over to you for a second.
That's all really phenomenal. So this is what you use to create extreme success using your mind, correct?
Absolutely. And there are tools. Now, I invite people to go to my website because I have a syndicated column in about 10 newspapers, and I take that column every month and I put it on, and I send it out for free. So if people go to my website, www.jamesmapes, M-A-P as in Peter, E-S, jamesmapes.com. Sign up for my newsletter. There's no charge. I send this off because I love to help people. That's period. That's it. And I've got a lot of archived articles. My last article I wrote is Putting the Pause Button on Life. And there's no article like it out there. And it's about in this technologically connected world. And I'm just that. You know, I'm much older than you and probably most of your listeners. But, I'm glued to email. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Google Plus. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Facebook. And you can even connect with me on my website. I share information. I get information. And I'm an addict. It's very hard. It makes my wife crazy. I'm sitting here in my car up on a mountain talking to you. I got an iPad next to me. But that being said, putting the pause button on life, you have to pause to reflect. I put it this way. You have to stop now and then to let life catch up with you. Because if you're a seeker and a learner like my friends are, and I am, you get all this input. You get all this information. You read. Well, you've got to stop and let all that catch up with you. Because that's the nature of the subconscious mind, too. It's like if you've ever had a problem and you think about it before you go to bed, you wake up and suddenly there's a solution. Or you set an alarm clock before you go to bed and you wake up like a minute before it goes off. The subconscious doesn't think. It's very much, it's better than a computer, but we put all this, once you put all this new stuff in, and that's why I talk about being grateful, that being gratitude and being thankful and focusing on those things in life that you can control and letting go of what you can't control. You can't control other people. You know, I see people all the time trying to make other people do things and manipulate them. Well, that's crazy because it exhausts you, it pisses people off, and it's a very negative thing to live in. So the way you focus your life, your energy, not only the people that surround you, but the environment. My buddy, one of my best friends, lost all his money. He's been one of my best friends since 1973. He lost his house. He's up in Connecticut. He has nothing. And what he does is he goes out in the cold and he walks 4 miles a day. He goes to the library. He reads a book every 2 days. He betters himself. He goes on the computer. He learns. He has a social network. And by the way, all brain science shows that the people that have a strong social network not only live longer because they're healthier, but they're mentally more alive. So having a strong social network in life of support, or however you want to look at it, is absolutely mandatory to extreme success. Because this is the beautiful thing. This summer, my wife and I had a party. We've been together 25 years, and we've been married 10 of those 25 years. And we had 55, 60 people at a party, that and all from diverse, you know, some people have lots of money, some people have nothing. All these people come from different aspects of life. A lot of our friends are actors, producers, writers, directors, but some of them are physicians and surgeons, and some of them are plumbers, and, you know, they just, and everybody there are cheerleaders for everybody else. So if we go to a party of good friends, a dinner party, and somebody has just had a success, we all cheer them. There's no jealousy. We want to help elevate people, because by helping elevate others, we elevate ourselves. And that's all part of using your mind.
I ask a question, and this is to make sure, I want to make sure I cover everything, but of course it never can. We're going to have to do another show. How do you stay motivated, and what tips can you give our listeners to stay motivated? Because motivation is hard for a lot of people.
It is. It is very hard. It's hard for me. I'm my own boss, you know, so it's hard. Okay, let's look at this. We'll get into this another time a little more. But number one, you have to identify your top values. And values are your deepest held beliefs. Now, we could, you know, I mean, you could do an exercise on the air about this, but it would take too much time. But just know that values are like honesty, integrity, service, fun, money is a value, almost anything. But it's very difficult to just kind of think of this off the top of your head. So number one, identify your values. Number two, you have to identify your strengths. I am a people person. I'm lousy at details. Right? I've tried to make myself better, but that's a fruitless attempt. I will never be better. So my strongest skill in life is communication and people. So once you, that's mine, but not everybody is that. Everybody's different. So you identify your strengths, and you play to those strengths, and you forget about trying to make your weaknesses better. So identifying your values, the deepest held beliefs. Two, identify your strengths. Once you do that, you can start to create your goals, or what I call a bigger vision, stretch goals, based around that. That means that you are doing what you're passionate about. And the deepest part of our mind resonates with emotion and passion. So that's very important. Two, you have to start to self-discipline. Like, I exercise every day because I know it affects my mind. You know, I'm very selfish about my choices. I know that, you know, an hour of exercise every day clears me out, gets energy going. Physicality is an extremely important part of being motivated. And also, being able to put the pause button and reflect on what are your goals. If you can't identify clearly what your goal is, like if somebody says to somebody, what do you want to be? Well, I want to be thin. That's not good enough. I want to be successful. Well, that's just plain stupid. What does that mean? Well, I want to be rich. That's another stupid thing. Because the mind can't grasp that. The unconscious has no way to know what that is. So when you've got to tie your values, you've got to tie your strengths, all that goes into clearly identifying your goals. So you can do, now this statement we could have a whole talk on. It's called living in the result. In other words, you have to be able to clearly identify your goal as if, in those two words, as if it was already complete. What do I feel like? What does it look like? What is different in my circumstances? Because the subconscious mind, like that little lemon thing I did with you.
Hey, James, we're just about out of time.
Then I'll tell you this one last thing. It can't tell the difference between a real or an imagined experience. So what you imagine is extremely important.
Roger that. Well, ladies and gentlemen, again, James, I want to thank you. We've got to have another show and get more into this. But ladies and gentlemen, again, thank you for listening. James, thank you for coming on. And also, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Mapes, or James's information, is also at the bottom of the website. Again, check out his books, check out his DVDs. And again, this is powerful information that is useful to all of us, because all of us are looking for our edge. All of us are looking to change our lives. All of us are looking to grow and develop. And someone like James is the type of person that you want to listen to, because they're a true mentor to getting you to your overall goals. So again, this is Zurian of the Zurian Show. I want to thank again Mr. James Mape, or James, for coming on and for blessing us with all of this phenomenal information. And we're going to definitely try to get him back on again. So with that said, everybody, have a beautiful life and take care of yourself and do the best you can with what you have. And again, remember, if you don't listen, if you're not listening, then all we're doing is talking to ourselves. This is Zurian of the Zurian Show. Have a great and blessed day. Thank you.